Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is another episode of Down South and Dirty with Stacey Hopkins and Scout Smith. We getting ready to tear it up today, y'all.
Yeah, it was quite a week for us here in Atlanta, and you know, it's bringing up a lot of you know, it's kind of like a family. And, you know, I like to say, and we're a dysfunctional family, but you know what they say about dysfunction? You can't spell it without the letters F-U-N. And we got some dysfunction going on between the Democratic Party, the Clinton campaign, Black Lives Matter, and it's a more nuanced conversation that we wanted to have, so that's kind of why we're doing the show today.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who are mad, and we're going to be bipartisan in the point that we're not, you know, when we say going in, let's say a loving critique. Okay? Look, we just have some loving critiques for everybody. Isn't that so tactful? You know, I'm trying to be more zen-like, you know? So we got a loving critique for people, but some of y'all are out of pocket and unhinged and need to go sit down somewhere. That's the double truth, Ruth. So, for y'all that don't know,
today's show is called The Hell You Talking About. So for y'all that's looking at that, you know, particularly some of our white listeners. Now, Southern white listeners might catch on to this. But this was a purely Ebonic phrase, basically. What the hell are you talking about? Talking is talking about.
No. Talking about. That is talking about. That's a particular dialect of the South.
Yeah, but what the hell are you talking about?
That's called Paul E. Porn.
Because this is
that's
Tom
Paul.
And now, y'all know normally on my show we have a burn treatment and a dirty list. Well, today, the whole show is a burn treatment and a dirty list.
Yes.
And it kind of ties into what and it kind of fell into the universe of what we was talking about in our series on inequality. So I guess it kind of jumps in there because now we kind of see it being played out, the racial component, because what we had coming on, so we give everybody a background. Hillary Clinton came to Atlanta, and if y'all don't know, Down South and Dirty is based in Atlanta, Georgia. And she came down here this past Friday. She went to the AU Center, Atlanta University, which is where Morehouse, Spelman, Clark Atlanta, and Morris Brown College is kind of converge in the same little area. We call that the AU. To unveil her African American outreach efforts and criminal justice platform. Now, the parts of it that I haven't heard of her criminal justice and her criminal justice platform kind of pisses me off because it really doesn't change the game. Like one thing that she said, and I'm just putting this point out there for I'm doing some foreshadowing. One thing that she said that kind of pissed me off, that showed me that nobody on her staff, and particularly her, have not done any research. She talked about where she's going to make it, and she's going to make it make policies that get rid of racial profiling. Well, let me explain something to most folks. Racial profiling is banned in almost every police department and by the federal government already. They just do the shit anyway. So it really doesn't matter because the government already done did it. So guess what? Because it just happens all the damn time. Most of us haven't seen, don't know that policies like this exist. So for her to say it is disingenuous because guess what? It already exists. We dig this, nobody gives a damn. And this is why Black Lives Matter is raising hell. Then the second thing she talks about is powder and crack cocaine and the disparaging of the citizen. We already know this takes place. Okay?
Right.
And
this is nothing
new. And the way y'all going to end up, the way the law always ends up getting crafted is that it isn't that the lighter sentences are going to go toward the crack dealers. It's just what's going to happen is they're going to take everybody, the coke powder folks are going to come to the same level as the crack dealers. So the white folks are going to get it as long as we are. So guess what? It really doesn't change them because we're still going to be doing crazy time. And still it comes down to the enforcement of the police because if you don't go catch them, if you ain't going to go look for them, they ain't going to ever get charged and sentenced. You're spending too much time in our neighborhood just trying to occupy us.
And that's kind of the conversation that's had, you know, when we're talking about marijuana legalization. Because there's still a problem for those, you know, for those who can't afford to pay those fees who doesn't have the capital to invest in these dispensaries and all the licensing things, you're still going to end up dealing, you know, you're going to be a Nancy Botwin from weed, you know, just selling on the street to your friends, and you are still fall up under the criminal side of the issue. So it's easy to say for one thing, but I feel you on that.
Right. So
there's also a problem too with Hillary, what she says, and you look at, you know, some of the people who are donating and to your campaign. So it's easy to say things, but when you look behind, like, you know, how are you going to enforce this if you've got, you know, people who benefit from mass incarceration donating to your campaign or working, you know, somehow,
politely call that you're not going to accept their money. And what's happening is these people are going to give these checks to the candidates. For people who don't understand, when the candidates say, oh, we're not going to accept this money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Money is going to hit their bank account. All right? And then they're going to look at how much, and then they're going to move that money somewhere else outside of the campaign. They may call themselves donating it to charity or doing whatever. But what it usually goes in is it gets moved into one charity or 504 or C4 or something of that nature that's educating on a particular policy that campaign is championing. So the money still ends up pushing the candidate. It just isn't being used directly in their campaign.
Right.
So
and
don't
I mean,
fall for it.
No, go ahead.
Is she gonna donate it truly to charity? Okay, get that money to feed the children. Give that money to give that money to any numerous charity that will and detail it. Show us the paperwork where you gave that specific amount of money to something that had nothing to do with anything that you're pushing as an agenda item.
Well, use it to make reparations to the ones that you will harm. Because for you to sit there and, you know, like with the whole, when she went on MSNBC and talked about DOMA and the crime bill, for you to say that, you know, and your excuse was, well, we had to do it, and, you know, we had to protect you from them being, the conservatives. You know, you have to realize that that caused some unintended consequences that did some lasting damage to millions of lives. Making reparations?
A lot of us are intelligent enough to know that that wasn't anything but a backup thing, because everything that happened in the 90s, that was even some of our leaders were complicit in it, because for some reason we thought, okay, if we just come in here and be tough on crime will go away. That's like the war on terror. If you had the only way you go locking people up and killing people don't do nothing but piss off more people, create vacuums for other folks to come in, particularly if there's never any type of development taking place in that community, anything to uplift these people. All you want to do is use force. And force is good because guess what? All you're doing is culling the herd so that you have less of us to deal with.
Right. So, and, you know, all war, let's talk about, the war on poverty. Where are the troops? The troops have left the field.
Yeah. We have all these, and this is one of the things that get me. And I'm a progressive, and I will tell you I'm not a liberal. So when you hear me say liberal sometimes, I am using it probably in the same context as some of our conservative brothers and sisters are doing. Because to me, progressivism and liberalism are not the same animal. Because to me, sometimes liberals are just as bad as conservative Tea Party folk. Because it's a zero-sum game with everybody. With those two groups, it's a zero-sum game. Or with the conservatives, a zero-sum game to be on the right. With liberals, it's a zero-sum game on the left. Whereas I believe progressives, because there are progressives who are right-leaning and left-leaning. With us, it's about the key root of the word in which we're talking about. We're talking about progress. We're talking about balanced, forward-looking progress. And so when you go in there and you talk, you listen to some of our liberals, particularly in the Democratic Party, these are the same people. Everything's a zero sum game. I mean, they want, regardless of how it affects everybody else, like everybody in America is going to be forced into doing what they want to do, and that's not America.
And that kind of brings us. To the reason for this show and why we talk about doing it, because for our listeners. We have been talking about inequality. And this was kind of a subversive view of political inequality that was in effect here in Atlanta when Hillary came down. If you don't have a seat at the table, chances are you're on the menu.
Right.
So, the whole basic crux of what went on and what the problem is these protesters, and let's clear this up. Okay, Black Lives Matter is kind of like how Occupy was. I mean, it's like Spartacus, okay? Anybody can pretty much say they're, a Black Lives Matter activist, but these were students from Morehouse, Spelman, but they were mostly students who disrupted the African American outreach. Now, here's the key. It's supposed to be outreach, right? So that means you're there to reach out to the community. You want to let them know, I'm here, this is what I bring. But here's the part that was totally left out and what Black Lives Matter is saying. How are you going to help me if you haven't been listening to me? How are you going to represent me if you're not listening to my voice? And so there are a lot of folks, on social media, particularly white progressives, who are all up in their feelings about, Black Lives Matter disrupting the event and why, they should be going. And not just white progressives, but the black elite. They should be going to, they shouldn't be disrupting Hillary. They did this to Bernie and y'all got mad. And they're right. A lot of us did get mad when it happened at Bernie. I was angry not so much at Black Lives Matter, but because they really, it seemed like they weren't really aware of his policies. But I totally get what they're saying. It's not about either candidate. It's about making sure that everyone responds, uplift and makes this, Black Lives Matter. And the All Lives Matter thing does not apply. We get All Lives Matter. And no one's saying that Black Lives Matter should be put up over. But the fact of the matter is that Black Lives in America have not mattered. And we're seeing that play out every day. And to come behind what we saw with that girl being flung all over the place by steroid stand in South Carolina, it was pretty much in the front for Clinton to sit there and talk down to these people. Well, you didn't allow me to talk. Well, we heard it, you know, and the whole thing that set it off was her position on the death penalty, because that was one of their demands. Now, Bernie Sanders came out and said, you know, you got to love Bernie because he just puts it out there, and he's like, I think it should be abolished. And he drops the mic and goes, that, I'm down for that. She said it should be used, you know, it should be limited and rare in its use. Well, then how do you set up the parameters of how it should be used? What do you decide is a heinous crime that deserves that? And to me, it's more of a punishment to sit in jail for the rest of your life than to take the easy way out.
Now, speaking on the death penalty specifically, this is my thing. Now, I'm not with the total abolishment of it, but I do have a parameter in which it should be used. This is the only instance I think it should be used. Is when I got, like a serial killer who has basically sat there and told us, yeah, I did it. I liked doing it. And if my ass ever get loose from y'all, I'll do it again and keep like doing it. You know you got a crazy summer gun like that. If you take a chance that he don't want to even take a chance that I might ever be free again, then yeah. But, I mean, it would have to be extreme circumstances.
But you know that kind of plays into, you know, and there's a lot of people who are rejecting religion. I don't say I disagree with that, but I am a woman of faith, and I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm not going to try to justify it or anything. It's personal. It's me. It's what fits me. You do you. I do me. Here's for me on the death penalty, here it is. If we say morally and legally that it is wrong for me as an individual to take a life, how in the hell does a state become a entity that is empowered with that? None of us, that is getting way out of our lane. And I think it's more suitable punishment to say, you know what, you don't know how to play nice with the other children, so we're going to put you in a controlled environment for the rest of your days. And like Richard Pryor said once, you know, Richard Pryor had a routine where he went to prison and talked to some of the prisoners, and he was like, yeah, we need jail. There's some folks out there, you need to be in jail. But to kill someone and the death penalty, it's not a penalty. That is such a misnomer. It's not a penalty. It's a permanent solution. So if you're wrong, you have no recourse. So that's why I'm against the death penalty. And I don't care. And some of the crimes that we hear people do make me sick. I don't co-sign them, but I also believe that we have sometimes stepped out of our lane. And I also believe that a human being, everyone is capable of turning their lives around and redeeming them, and we have to give them the opportunity. But if you don't, it's like having a dog. You keep a dog chained up, you treat them bad, you don't feed them right, you let them loose off that chain, they're going to bite the shit out of the first thing they see. Same thing with humans. If you treat humans in a certain way and then they go, why you act that way? Well, that's how you treated me. So what did you expect? So, you know, but for Clinton to do what she did, it was kind of condescending to say, you know what, let me tell you what you need. And you don't know. And what, you know, the difference between, you know, the disruptions between Bernie and Hillary. Bernie was like, okay, he listened. He came back, bam, he got Simone Sanders on his team. He laid out his platform and said, there it is. What have we heard from the Clinton campaign since Friday?
More of the same
crickets,
stuff they've been talking
about. Crickets and frogs. We haven't heard a damn thing. And everybody's sitting up there with their nose turned up. And I'm kind of disappointed in my congressional rep. I mean, I look at this man as not only a personal hero, but he's kind of like, if you've ever met John Lewis, he's like your granddad and a rock star rolled up in the one. And people, when they say when you move, they talk about location, location, location. I look to see whose district I am. And as long as I'm still in the 5th Congressional District of Georgia, which is represented John Lewis's district, I'm good. And there's been, you know, a lot of talk of, you know, particularly in the black community, that because he represents what we call one of the black elite. Yes, you do have that cred. You know, you have that serious civil rights cred. And there's nothing, we can't deny any achievements that any of those who we now consider the black elite have. And I'm not trying to take that away from them. But y'all kind of sold us out. Y'all got tired. Y'all saw that the people were getting, you know, and a lot of this is our fault. This is what happens when you leave a vacuum. And those who are out there who are trying to fight for you, if you don't have their back, this is how you go to the dark side. And I'm not saying that Representative Lewis has necessarily gone to the dark side, but it was very disappointing to hear him say, and you and I were talking about this before the call, that, you know, he had said in the AJC that the activists, you know, the protesters represented, quote, another time, another era. Well, yeah, they're using, they, you know, if we look back, this is what we're seeing is the same dynamics that we saw during the civil rights era with, you know, SNCC, you know, at the divisions between SNCC and the other civil rights groups, and the difference, you know, we still argue about the difference in tactics. You know, we got that everything you can do, I can do better kind of mentality. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. But, you know, and I think he's missing the mark on this. They represent another time and another era, but it's the same thing. We've never left that place.
And this is one of the things that I, you know, that got me, that Mayor Reed, Conceived Reed of Atlanta, you know, he talks about the long, you know, standing relationship between the Clintons and the African American community. When he said,
what relationship? What? And it's like, please expound on that.
I was seethingly mad because I want somebody to explain to me. Now, true enough, I have biases against the Clintons that are deep seated, and it goes back. You know, I'm one of the few things I still hold on as a conservative, that from my conservative days is my dislike for the Clintons. And it never had to do with anything, the fact that they were Democrats. It had nothing to do with their party. It had nothing to do with that. I dislike them, and I'm going to use an analogy. I love the House of Cards. I love Frank Underwood as a character. Frank Underwood was an actual political figure. I would be scared of him. And everybody knows that there's a slight bit of a hint of Clinton and of Bill and Hillary Clinton in those two characters. Okay?
Yeah, Claire. Yeah.
And so nobody, please do not get it twisted. When you don't understand
that
the Hillary and Bill are not separable. The reason that everything has ever taken place is they have a goal. Now, and that goal is to be the most powerful political entity in our country. And I would be okay with it is if it had anything to do with bettering the lives of all the American people. But it does not.
Exactly.
It does not. Just because Hillary did the nay-nay and doggone Bill can take the sacrifice, automatic to the black community. It doesn't automatically give you a thumbs up with us. They do the same thing every other Southern aristocratic family has ever done to our community. They come in here, they shuck and jive with us, they pass out a couple of low-hanging fruit to the influence of our community, and they're gone. And that's the problem.
And
that
why
I'm
was
having.
Usher there? Wait a minute. Why was Usher there? Let me ask you something. Do you take your political advice from entertainers or, you know? Because I'm thrilled that Killer Mike and Lil B, and the rap community and hip hop community has embraced Bernie Sanders. And for the record, if any of them are listening, can we get a mixtape? But, you know, here's the thing. I think it's great. I'm glad you're on the team, but I don't look for detailed political analysis from endorsements from particular people. I think it's great. You know, Usher, you make some catchy tunes, you know, but, and you've got your, you know, foundation for girls, but I kind of got a problem with you having a foundation to help, you know, young girls, and then you put stuff out. Has anybody ever listened to the words of a good kisser? But kind of sets up kind of a hypocrisy, especially when you hear it on the radio, because that's really a song for grown folks. Okay.
But this is
There's a reason
that if you notice that Hillary Clinton, in every station that she's went, every place she's went, she's brought some kind of pop artist out in front of her.
Because that'll get them. Yeah, that'll get them on my team.
Well, this shows, now I'm going to go into that because this is one of my areas that I work in. Okay.
I'm gonna come give you a hug when the show is over because they might send out a hit squad for you after this.
This is political psychology for you. The Republicans do it, Democrats do it, and when you see it done, they're shooting right now for emotional heartstrings. And what they know is that for Democrats and Republicans too, they both are aiming at the poorest of their communities. Okay. They're aiming at the poorest and the less educated of both of their communities. If you look at the stuff that the Republican Party says, it only resonates with poor people with low education. You know, they coming to get Obama coming to get your guns. You know, these immigrants are taking your job.
Mm-hmm.
All of that
right.
Stuff. And with us on the Democratic side is that, you know, your baby too can be a football player. Your baby can be a rapper. This, that, and the other. And it gives us false hope. Because I posted something up the other day that it was amazing how folks took to it. Because there's one, we finally have the first African-American billionaire who did not make his billion by either playing sports or being an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I seen that, you know, and people's like, well, he's probably a Republican. I said, I don't care what he is. I don't care. I don't care politically. It says something that all of the people, the majority, we got such a large, wealthy group of people who all of they only thing is that they either sing or they run a ball.
Right.
We finally, in 2015, finally created a billionaire off of somebody doing out of the financial industry, that we've never created one out of the finance industry or manufacturing, that we don't have tycoons. That everything that everybody else has done has been based off of entertainment, which means diversion.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is diverting us from what our problems are. So that's the same thing they're doing. It's a diversion. Because guess what? We're suffering people. And when you're suffering,
right,
you look things to divert your mind from the problem you're going in. So we go into songs and sports. Okay? And so you bring out these actors and these recording artists and all of this stuff because these are the people that you know that we look to because these are the people that take away our pain. And you associate yourself with the people that take away our pain. But at the same time, you're planning on doing something that doesn't alleviate our pain, okay? Because let's sit there and talk about the issues. Hillary tags on to the – Bernie says, I want free college for everybody. I want free public universities. Clinton comes in and says, yeah, I want it too, but I think
–
You got to work for it, this, that, and other. Now, I'm not saying that that's a wrong idea, but she always has to bring a caveat that goes in that lets her donors know that I'm not gonna let them. I'm not gonna let them level the playing field like that. That's basically
but wait,
what she
wait,
said.
Wait. But that goes.
Stacey, you down?
You there? You hear me now? You hear me? Okay, I must have hit a dead spot. Okay. So that's all based on the presumption that those who are going to college are not working hard enough already. And that,
right.
You know, everything is relative. If you're going to talk about that, then let's talk about the Fight for 15. Because one of the things with Fight for 15 is the, you know, the scheduling of workers, where, you know, you have on-call scheduling for these workers. So how the hell am I going to go to school if I got a job that I need to help me pay for school and to help me live? I can't take classes because I don't know when I'm going to be called in for work. So what the hell do you want me to do? So,
exactly.
You know, we have to keep in mind when we talk about this that everything's relative, and maybe you need to change your stances to be more in aligned with what's actually coming out your mouth. And the problem
right.
is that we get too blinded by the light during these political campaigns, that we don't look for these nuances, we don't ask these questions. And that's kind of lies behind some of the people who are disillusioned behind President Obama. And we need to keep in mind what people can and cannot do.
Right. And the moment you hear candidates say but to one of their own policies, they're letting you know. It's just like they're just letting you know, as my mother always says, if you say but, you just cancel out everything that you just said prior to the but. It's a good idea, but I don't think I can do it. So I'm really going to try because these are going to be the issues we're going to have. Now, the least learning.
I'm not a racist, but.
Yeah. It's just like Bernie. When Bernie says something, we never hear any buts.
And Bernie puts it out there.
He's going to try.
That's in Brooklyn.
He's going to succeed, but he's going to try. And I would rather have a president of the United States who is actually going to try to fix the problems than just give me freaking lip service. And then this goes in, you know, and this is what we here in Georgia particularly, I am so tired of. Because for everybody that does not know, if you go look on the scale of ethics for all the 52 entities that exist, governmental sovereignties that exist in the United States of America, Georgia is at the dead-ass bottom of that list.
They don't call us the Dirty South for nothing. We earned that.
We are the most corrupt state in the freaking union. Okay, the most corrupt state in the union. And it is done because we have people who look after themselves before they look after their people. Okay, and this is what gives me about the African-American elite contingent. Okay, everybody went to run their happy asses down there to the AU Center so they can go get a picture with Hillary Clinton.
Weren't the selfies precious? Weren't those selfies absolutely precious?
And so you go down now, and so you're going down there because the thing is, I'm going to see so many flyers and mailers in the upcoming election. How you're going to use Hillary's face so that you can show your people how connected you are with the great power to be. I feel like a Native American, and you did going to the Great White Mother. I mean, for real, yeah.
But you know what was really what really got me, okay, was all this popped off, right? So I'm on Twitter, and you know, there's you know, you've got certain people who have made a name, you know, who have you know, rid that Black Lives Market pony, right? And you got folks talking about, instead of talking about what happened in Atlanta, I was like, okay, I'm expecting y'all to, you know, and I got to give big ups to Sean King. You know, he's been putting stuff out there. But there have been some people, I ain't going to call no names, but they're fond of down vests, who were tweeting about marshmallows in the Lucky Charms in Atlanta.
Exactly.
The activist community was real. Ain't nobody said nothing. Folks was calling me, asking me, well, what went on? What's happening? What's up? You know, the activist community, nobody said anything. And that tells you something. For me, that kind of set off the alarm. Y'all need to understand about, you know, there's another dynamic along with the Black elite. The Democratic Party has done a very good job of subverting the voices of those who speak truth to power. And one of the ways they did is that they co-opted these nonprofits. None of these nonprofits that advocate for these things said a word. And they didn't have to come out against, you know, they have to be nonpartisan for tax reasons, blah, 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 blah. But on the issue that they have supposedly have been championing for, they have been too damn quiet. And that tells me either somebody got you in, somebody, no, that tells me, period, somebody got you in pocket. And
but this is the thing. You sit there and watch. You got so many members of the Democratic Party and even our elected officials who are now, you know, shifting gears, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Shifting gears and either leaving office or giving up party positions, this, that, and the other, to go work inside of the nonprofit zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And do you think when these people leave the party or whatever that they're going out? Because I'm a member of the party. And I am a member, I'm a very vocal member of the party.
Well, for now.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm sure that there's probably a plan and wait to see how can the hell we get rid of Scout.
Man, there's a dartboard with your face on it somewhere on Pulliam Street. I can guarantee it.
Somebody hates me, because if they don't, I'm surprised. Now, because
I love
you. Because it's like this. You might not talk to me, but when you look at me, I can see that you're ripping my heart out with your eyes. And all of you know who I'm talking about. If you're one of those people, you know it. Because I look at you and I give you that smile like, man, fuck you. And then I will come over and talk to you, and I will shake your hand. Because I want to let you know that I'm not fucking scared of you. Okay? Because guess what? Just as easy as I can go down, you can go down too. So, and I might go down a little faster just because of the simple fact that I ain't got people with lots of money willing to back my bull. And this is one of the things that really, this is one, I talked about it a little bit last week, and I've been talking about it a lot here lately with different groups, is that, because I, you know, I brought out the word that my good friend came out, political ass kissery, PKA, is a disease, it's prevalent.
That's a really good word.
Actually, this is for a cure. PK is very dangerous to the democratic processes of this country.
We should do a telethon. We really should. We should do a telethon.
This is the thing.
Well, okay.
Hold on. Because this is the thing. A lot of people that you see, either elected officials or political operatives who are all running over to the Hillary camp, are doing it for one reason and one reason only, people. It's because there's money to be had over there. And corrupt people like money, and particularly it's easy money. And the Clinton campaign knows this. They know that we will sell. They know there are people who are ready to be bought, and there's people who are ready to be sold. So if you see...
Because folks don't do a...
So if you measure your political op by the amount of work they have and who they're working for, don't always take that, because some of us are actually principled people, and there's a lot of them, that we will not be bought and we will not be sold, because we got into this game to actually make change, not to make change, okay? Because
and,
that's all everybody's doing is change.
But that goes to, you know, you can't find common ground and you can't work together in unity if you're diametrically opposed in your mission. Now, if
right.
you're in it, you know, if you're in it for money and power and I'm in it for the struggle and to help the people, we're not going to find any common ground, and I know you're going to throw me under the bus because you're out there dancing for them dollars.
Right.
And so that's a problem, but you can't sit there and say, whose side are you on? You ain't on my team. You ain't never going to be on my team.
If you have political parties that have a problem with their donor base, they have to get money to operate somehow. And we've all seen the reports on how the Clinton campaign has picked certain states to assist in their run. Now, Georgia didn't make that list, but if you didn't make that list and your neighbor made that list, you start dancing a little harder, hoping that you can catch some of it. But because Hillary put a lot of money in South Carolina. The reason she put a lot of money in South Carolina is because South Carolina is not kissing her ass, because the South Carolina Democratic Party has people who are active Bernie supporters, and they have people who are active Hillary supporters. And you got to see that that's a battleground. And what the Georgia Democratic, what the Democratic Party of Georgia has failed to understand that, and it's a conservative, and I'm saying this, but it's a conservative idea that actually works, that competition spurs, you know, spurs in innovation. It brings more to the table. If I know I got you in my back pocket already, why am I going to do anything for you?
Yeah, you know what was funny, how, you know, when everything pops
to do something, then I'm going to have to work with you a little harder. And see, what we have is a lot of folks saying, okay, we got to get Hillary on our side. We get, because she, you know, she got the major money, she willing to spend it. See, the thing is, everybody knows to play that game with the Sanders campaign ain't going to get nothing but Bernie telling you, what the fuck you talking about?
Well, you know, one of the things, but a lot of the conversations I was seeing on social media, you know, from white progressives and the black elite, that, you know, we do have a consensus, is one of the things that I heard was that, well, you know what, well, I don't know why Black Lives Matter was there at Hillary Clinton's place. They should have been at the GOP. And I'm like, why would we do that? You have a demographic that votes over 90% for the Democratic Party. We pretty much have an idea. Why go to the GOP for them to tell them what they've been telling us already? We already know Black Lives doesn't matter. And a good example was, if you go on our Facebook page, you'll see on CNN, it was Representative Keith Ellison out of Minnesota having a discussion with the roundtable. And Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, Representative Marsha Blackburn, you know, she's like, well, all lives matter. And then she tries to use that to segue into a policy issue on Medicaid, Medicare. And, you know, well, all lives should matter and blah, 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 blah. Well, let's just be real. Y'all just want to, you don't want to expand Medicaid. You know, you don't. Your policies have already, the GOP's policies have already told us. We know. We already know what's going on uptown. So it would be futile. You know, when I was working, doing work with immigration reform, and one of the things we were going up and talking to Republican legislatures, and, you know, I was getting frustrated because we were going up to, you know, asking, can we have immigration reform? No. Okay, we'll come back. Can we have immigration reform? No. And I was like, I ain't going back. I'm not going back and asking them people. First of all, I'm not asking you for anything anymore. You know, is, you know, because that already sets up, you know, you're working out of a false frame that you are have the power to give and take things to me. Oh, no, you got it all twisted. You got me and life all messed up. So I was like, you know, that it was that. And then we kept going, how many times these people got to tell you no? And I saw the Latino immigration activists getting frustrated. And then that's when they went out on their own and they said, okay, we're going to lay in front of these buses. You know, we're going to kick it. We're going to chain ourselves to fences. But nobody came up like and turned on them like the way we saw it. People turning on Black Lives Matter, oh, they shouldn't have done that. Because they, by doing that, even though we did, you know, some of us, it's not a tactic that we would participate in, and some of us kind of, you know, poo-poo down on it, you talked about it. It kept it up there, and that's exactly what Black Lives Matter has done. But one of the problems I do have, and a loving critique that I have for Black Lives Matter and these activists who are, you know, the liberation movement, when you go in the political realm, you have to understand how the levers of power work and what power responds to. Now, these politicians, the Democrats, and why people aren't really, you know, Black Lives Matter is kind of falling off the radar lately, is because nobody's sure if you can deliver. Now, if you sit up there and tell me, you know, you're making demands and all that, the first thing I want to know two things, whether you have the power to either, A, vote me in or vote me out. Until Black Lives Matter shows that they can galvanize their followers, enough to go vote. And if you talk to particularly black youth, you know, I've done voter registration. I did it last year with a nonprofit. And I've done some voter engagement. And when you get out into the African-American neighborhoods and you actually talk to people, not the black elite, not the handful of people that show up at the city council meeting, you know, because that's a small group, right?
You go cone out there, well, Pookie and them standing.
Right. When you go out there and talk to them, the first thing they're going to tell you, you have an electorate that is disillusioned, that is jaded. And one only has to look at the numbers. When you look at the numbers from the 2014 election, and I know it was a midterm election, but and what was stunning was how the turnout numbers were low in Metro Atlanta. And that was, I mean, I don't believe anybody went over 30% in Metro Atlanta. Now, we're seeing, you know, I don't know if people keep up with international politics, but over in Turkey, they're having an election, and I believe 87%. Their voter, 87%.
And then let's go back and look at the summer. If you go back to the summer and you go look at the voter turnout for the Scottish referendum on independence, it was 86%.
Exactly.
And for that particular election, they actually increased the franchise, the vote to their 16-year-olds, and they was able to pull it up to 86%. So you got to look at these countries. And we talk about the great American democracy, but we look at the countries around the countries that surround us, and hell, all of them have greater high turnout. Hell, the Canadian elections that just took place that put in a progressive liberal, a member of their progressive liberal, their liberal party in the power.
Right.
It was still higher than the American turnout. It was somewhere in the 50th percentile rate.
Exactly. So, you know, and we're having a lot of talk about, you know, institutionalized and systemic racism and how the system is inherently flawed. Well, it's not flawed. It's broken because you ain't using it. You're allowing a vacuum. I mean, we saw this play out with Arab Spring. Remember that there was a loud trucking noise after the protest died, and that was the one thing they didn't think of. After you toppled that person, you left a vacuum for the military to just slide in the home plate on. Then you turned around and said, help us get these people out.
Now, check this out. Now, I just talked about, we were talking about voter turnout. And I just wondered, because I brought Canada up, so I really didn't know what the Mexican number was. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, voter turnout in Mexico was 64.6%. There are 58 countries in the world who have better voter turnout than the United States of America. 58.
The highest the youth vote was in the U.S. was the year that the youth got the right, the year that 18-year-olds got the vote, and I believe it was 51%. It has never hit that total. So we have a small number of engage people who are making the decision for all of us. And you can't say the system is broken if you never got it.
When you look at the numbers, oh, my God, I'm sitting here looking at this list. These are countries in which we would love to send our military into to sit there and talk about, you want to bring democracy.
We're going to bring you freedom and democracy. We're going to bring it to you. We're going to bring American style. But, you know,
the highest is Uruguay. Uruguay 96.1% in 2009. I mean,
you got to engage.
The Congo,
in order to
France 71.2%. Iceland 68.9%.
You know what? I would go to Iceland, but I'll starve to death. I can't eat that fish and stuff. I can't do that. I'm going to have to take me some hot sauce and stuff over there.
Change.
I'm going to need a lot of hot sauce.
7.9%. Guatemala, 61.4%.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, okay, but let's come down to it. This is what we and this is how that all started. African American electorate, okay, that does not vote, don't want to vote because they see it as being useful.
Complicit. But wait a minute. But they do have a point, Scott. But let's stop it because that's the cool side of the pillow. They're partially right. Because look who we got up there. We got a weak bench. We have you know, the establishment giving us their prepackaged, here you go, vote for it. We know what's best for you type of candidate. And when we have one that the people, we're seeing this dynamic play out right now with the Hillary versus Bernie. We got people saying, we want Bernie. And they're saying, no, you don't. What you need is Hillary. But I want Bernie. No, you want this. But I don't want that. Well, it's good for you to eat it.
The black community, we have something that is worse. We have no choice at all. Because if you look at the vast majority, go back to this, particularly here in Georgia, if you go back and you look at it, you go back and look at the Secretary of State's website, and you go and look at all of our House and Senate races, where there's an African American sitting in that seat. Go and see how many of them have a challenger each year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get less than 1% of those races who actually see a challenger each year.
Well,
okay.
You can, and it's, wait. If we're going to talk about that,
the only time you see a Democrat that faces a challenge if he lives in a swing district, a district that has a particularly challengingly growing or active Republican component. Like my house, the House district that I used to live in, 132.
Mm-hmm.
No, that district, according to, if you look at presidential elections, performed 70% Republican. But for the last 25 years, it has Democrat in the seat. And it went from an African-American Democrat to a white Democrat, a very progressive white Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you have a higher voter turnout in that district than I see in some of the districts here in Atlanta, because we know down there every election year that there is a fight. And if we want to keep the type of representation that we want, we have to go out and vote. Now, if I'm living in a place where I don't get a choice, the only people that come out and vote for me are the people who vote just because they vote. And they feel like that is a, you know, those people who are hardcore voters like myself, who vote because we know what it took for us to get the right. But see, everybody, we got a whole generation of people who have never been, who we think may have been touched. And this is one of the things that African-American elite seem to forget sometimes, is that even our struggle did not touch everybody in the way that you thought it did. Yet we all suffered together. But we never had high participation in the movement. We never had high participation because we always had those folks like, you know what, we don't need to start no trouble, so we just going to stay out of the way. Let
y'all
them do all
quit.
That.
Y'all quit. Don't do all of that. And, you know, I got a problem, but I'm a call out some of your colleagues, well your entity, because I'm not officially a Democrat. I vote Democratic because I really don't have much of a choice. Now, I know there's some libertarians and Greens who say I do have a choice, but there's issues with that. But here's the problem I have. Now, there's two things. Now, I personally came across a problem that was in Georgia where there are certain city municipalities who are charging a fee to do voter registration fee. Now, I heard from the council and from the Democratic Party, oh, thank you, we kept it all low because this all, when I first discovered it, this was during the 2014 race, right? And these were Democratic cities, you know, majority Democratic cities that were governed by Democrats where this was happening. Union City was the first one. East Point, Georgia, is the second one. Right? Everybody came out, and everybody's the consensus, oh, it's wrong, but we're not going to fix it because, and I've heard some amazing excuses why it couldn't be fixed. But then you want to sit out there and holler about protecting the vote, and, you know, Secretary of State Kemp is going against us, and you know, all of this, you know, they're trying to take us back. We won't go back, blah, blah, blah. You want to put on your marching shoes, and I'm sitting back with a sense of bemusement watching all of this farce go on. And then the second thing was something you and I have talked about from time to time, that little redistricting thing that went on during the last legislative session. And Senator Ford, Renita Hamilton, there were a couple of Democrats, I forget the gentleman's name, with the Gwinnett Dems, who, you know, they stood up and they were like, y'all need to see this because you're diluting the minority vote. You know, for me, I lived in one of those affected districts. I voted for Representative Keisha Waite, but now I don't really have a representative right now, or I do have one. I don't know her. So they did all of that, and no one said a peep about it because it was a mutually beneficial arrangement to make. Republicans got some protection out of those, out of their district. Democrats got to protect, you know, certain people they wanted to keep in office. But, and the people have no idea that's going on. If you live in districts 59 or 60 in Metro Atlanta, go look and see who your representative is, because I tell you, it ain't who you voted for. You know, my state senator was Representative Nan Ork. Now I have Senator Vincent Ford because I have since moved. But, you know, it was when all this went down, where was the black elite? What did they say? What
they
did you hear?
Protected them.
You heard crickets and frogs.
I am a proud African American. But I can tell you now, some of the things that they continue to do makes
and
me
say.
Want and start desire to want to run for office myself. Because my thing is that I'm okay with being broke. I'm okay with not being able to go out and do all these lavish things that they want to go do. My thing is about the people. It's about the people. Because if the least
of us
are
broke.
If the least
that's why you broke.
Okay, everybody's doing okay.
If you got steak on your plate besides the beans and rice, chances are you did go to the dark side, because you can tell, it's really easy to tell, particularly Atlanta, and this is whether on the political side or on the advocacy side. The people who are quiet and, you know, they doing all right, they made a deal with the devil. The ones who are out there hollering, the ones who are struggling, because we got a lot of great activists in Atlanta, and it's really sad. It hurts me. We are all, most of us who are out there, we're either no better or the same as those we advocate for. But
exactly.
If we go into the nonprofit or the political side, then all of a sudden, you can't say this, you have to do that. And then it's like, you want to eat? You know, it's like you're in a hostage situation. And so
right.
Those fiery voices don't get so fiery. And it's very, very frustrating, and it's very sad, because you get into those circles and you go, that's when it's like, you know, I was talking with John Jackson, and I were talking about this on Facebook the other day. And I told him, it's like, you know, people, it's like Oz. When you pull that curtain back, it's nothing but a sad little man behind
well, let's
that
do
curtain.
Let's do something.
Let's
right
have
now.
Some people call in. Call us in.
Yeah,
talk us down. Tell us we're wrong. 657-383-0995.
Right. 657-383-0995. Give us a call. Tell us how you feel. Because this is like this. If you are a supporter of the African American League or a member of the African American League, come tell us why we're wrong. Explain to me what can the Clinton administration do for the African American community that Bernie Sanders can't do or is not willing
exactly
to do.
Exactly.
You agree with us? Tell us why you agree with us, because we have to build the movement. Because, see, the movement, if we don't build a movement, then we're going to continue to get the same type of governance. It's just like y'all have heard on my dirty list for the last 2 weeks. I talk about DeKalb County. They're talking about changing the type of government we have. And what they fail to realize, and this is what got my goat, as I start looking at how long that the people who are governing DeKalb County, how long they have lived here, a lot of these folks maybe have 20 years here. They're not, they didn't grow up as children here. Very few of them did. They were adults who knew the place to move. Now, I was raised in DeKalb County. My parents moved to DeKalb County in 1977. Okay, so we're talking about the black elite. We moved to DeKalb County in 1977 on Gresham Road. There was a doggone dairy farm on Gresham Road.
It was for the longest.
Yes, and that dairy farm was there to maybe about 1985. You go down Panthersville Road or Clifton Springs. There, out across from where you have Georgia Perimeter now, there were farms. There was a prison farm over there. That was the country.
That was out of town.
Okay, and in 1979, there was a commission put forth in DeKalb County to look at the change of government that we needed. There needed to be a change in government. We had a county manager system, and the system was corrupt. And they felt like if we had one, because the county manager and the department heads ran the county like it was their own fiefdoms. So what they decided, well, maybe we have one strong person and a CEO who controlled all of this, there would be less graft in this than another. So we ended up getting a CEO system. The current chair of the town, who was Manuel Maloof, you know the namesake for Manuel's Tavern, was against it. But he didn't. When it came about, he said, let the people vote on it. They did, and that's what we got. And for a couple of years, for about a decade, we had good government. Under Leanne Levitan, under Manuel Maloof and Leanne Levitan, we had pretty good government.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Vernon Jones. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Michelle Ellis. Now we got Lee May. Now I'm not gonna sit there and put Lee May in the same category with the rest of them, but bro, you trying to get up there with them? Stop, because it's not the type of government that we have. It's the type of people that govern, and I'm going to continue to say that till let people's ears bleed, because if you elect the same type of people over and over again who are cut from the same cloth, who want the same goals out of life, who all they are seeing is public service is being another way of another step of the ladder of social mobility, then we will continue to get the same type of government, which is corrupt. That is all we're saying. And a lot of our members of the political black elite, that is all you're looking for. And the Clintons are the hottest game in town. Everybody knows who they are. So you're just trying to be a part of the Cool Kids Club. But let me explain something. True leaders blaze trails, okay? We don't walk down the same road that everybody else walks down. True leaders blaze trails. We go out there in the woods, the jungles, or whatever, and we cut those trails. We make brand new trails. We lead. And leading always doesn't mean that you're going to be able to drive the nicest car, live in the biggest house. It doesn't mean that you get to take trips all over the world. It means that's all that means, that you just balling. And you balling on the people's dime. And that's
no,
the only
I'm in the struggle. You don't recognize my struggle. You know, that's what, and then you want to come out, and then you come and look for people to validate your cred. That's where the nonprofits come in, which nonprofits are, not only do they subvert the voices, pretty much a way to launder the money. Because that's where some of that money goes to. And you've got nonprofits jockeying for those dollars.
You know, so many people want to form nonprofits. They try to, let me say something that's probably going to shake the political spectrum. Okay, because guess what? We as progressives and our brethren on this side, the liberals, are always talking about raising taxes on the wealthy, okay? to make sure that we can pay for some of the things that we need, because we believe that the 1% is not paying their fair share. But
mm-hmm.
for some of you left side who are advocating for these same things, but you are also members of the 1%, you are trying to get out of paying those same damn taxes by forming nonprofits. That is bullshit, that is hypocrisy, and you need to burn in hell for thinking about it. Because when you form a nonprofit and none of the money that's coming through is actually helping anybody, but you got a pretty damn good salary.
Trickle down. Trickle down economics. They have fully embraced
it.
But no, we're not like the GOP. We're different, and you're not. And this is not to say to vilify or anything, but, you know, we have to get right. And you can't ask anybody to do something if you're not doing it yourself. You got to make sure your own backyard is clear before you start looking over the fence in somebody else's. And the Democratic Party has done a bad job of doing that. And, you know, the loyalty, you know, you had asked the question about why does the black political elite have this unswayable loyalty to Clinton, and I think we pretty much answered it. It's the money.
Because we have
the cash rules everything around me mentality.
And this is the same black elite that stepped behind Hillary in 2008, to only watch the first African-American president take the primaries without your help. You did nothing. But the moment he became president, you watched all of y'all happy asses run up Washington. You sucked up all the damn tickets to the inaugural ball, and you sat there and started about kissing this man's ass. And guess what? He didn't give no favors to none of y'all. There are some newcomers that came into the game that wasn't around back then. That you don't, but you making the same mistake again. You figure, well, okay, I came into the game and I came in with Barack, but I want to stay here, so I feel like Hillary is the best chance, so I'm gonna run over to her. You know better. My thing has been, and I looked at my voting record, and maybe I'm just a rebel at heart. But I looked at my, I went and thought my voting record is for who I'd have voted for president. You know, and the folks who know me good, know that I used to be a Republican. But my first vote was not cast for a Republican. It was cast for a member of the Reform Party. I voted for Ross Perot. He was a balanced candidate. Yeah, he was for business, but he also was talking about the middle class at the same damn time, and both of us coming up together. But then I couldn't, William Jefferson Clinton so doggone much because I thought he was a charlatan to our community. Even as a Republican, I was a militant black man. And I thought William Jefferson Clinton had no good for our people. So that made me, I didn't have much of a choice in 96 because Ross Perot came out, he was crazy. So I fucked around and voted for Bob Dole, which makes me sick. I gave two votes to George Walker Bush.
Do you know?
Why?
I
was in the head. I mean, but then at the same, I wish now that I go back at it and I look at the way I lined up. I mean, hell, I liked it, Al, but I was a young person and Al just didn't excite me. But Al would have made a damn better president. We'd have been in a lot better position. And I actually thought, and I will tell you this, I didn't think that George Bush should have been president the first time in 2000. I think I admitted that election was stolen. I was a proud Republican and say, we stole that one. Ding.
Well, I'm a progressive. As a progressive, I've gotten quite used to, you know, sitting at the voting booth and, you know, I hit a button, but I have a look on my face like I'm downwind of a bad smell. And, you know, I'm tired of being held hostage, and I'm very, very tired of, you know, you hear some criticisms come out of the right wing that, you know, black people, you know, you all vote Democratic. And it's like, yeah, because, you know, the Democrats say vote for us because we're not that guy. Which is really the truth, because it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it's kind of having an argument. It's like two bald men arguing over a comb. Okay?
You vote Republican, I feel like, sometimes. Now, I'm not trying to dog my Republican brothers, my Republican brothers and sisters. Because, like, for instance, I'm going to give a shout-out to one I normally don't give a shout-out to, Derrick Grayson. Now, Derrick Grayson, he will not admit to being an African-American. He's a black man. Okay? Because he said he don't know a damn thing about it. Okay? I give that. But as an African-American conservative, he stands up more against police brutality than any Democrat that I've ever seen. If you go back and look at Derrick Grayson's page and his Facebook and his website and listen to his arguments on YouTube, when it comes to police brutality, he is a hell of a lot damn more militant than any of the folks that's in the struggle right now. Hell, he about got Black Lives Matter beat because he has a meme up on his Facebook page right now of two Nazis holding a white baby with a gun to his head. And you know what it says? He said these were just good law enforcement officers doing their job.
Right, but, you know, the problem, and, you know, while I will give him props for standing up for that particular issue, the danger, carries on that particular issue, but when you look at the entire, if you were to go through the entire breadth of his policies and platforms, there are some things that aren't good for the Democratic Party because how they operate, and we're not going to go into the libertarian thing and all of that. They put their principle goes up, sometimes violates the rights of blacks and gives them a license to discriminate. So the libertarian mindset is a bit problematic. This is why I can't say, you know, I'm not really down with the libertarian cause, but if you down, you know, with Black Lives Matter and, you know, trying to help liberate and achieve true freedom and justice for black people. Yeah, we can walk up the road a certain length together, but at some point I'm going to have to go this way and you keep going whichever way you're going. But if I, you know, we have to come to an all-or-nothing mentality.
Right. In journeys, you meet up with people on the road and you may, you know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan. And you remember when the whole Lord of the Rings started off, and you know, I love movie analogies to real life because a lot of these times these people are writing stuff for the sake of trying to put out a message. But at the beginning of the first movie, you had all of the fellowship leave the Elven Kingdom together. But as they walked, as they were making their way, and all of them had the same goal of trying to defeat this new dark power. As you see through the next two movies, you see everybody going off on separate ways, dealing with separate issues they had. You see Aragorn going off trying to regain his kingdom. You see Gandalf going off to go do something else. All at the same time, well, Frodo and Samwise Gamgee kept their eyes focused on getting to Mordor and throwing that ring into that volcano. We all cannot walk. We all won't walk the same road together the whole way. Even you and me, Stacey, we've been up on roads, separated, and come back again, and this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake that, you know, sometimes what I'm trying to do and what you're trying to do just didn't meet up at that particular point, and we went off and did what we had to do. But see, this is the problem that I have with the black political elite. You don't know when to get off the road with somebody. Or when to get on the road with them.
Well, it's kind of hard to get off that road when you're sitting on their board, when you're getting, you know, you're getting finances from the people we're trying to fight.
Yeah, see, the thing is, they're not walking on the road with nobody. They're riding on the wagon. So when you don't want to do nothing and you're just riding alone, you know, it's easy to ride the wagon. Your feet ain't hurting. You know, I'm probably sure there's some bread and wine on that wagon. You know, stay on the wagon. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to hurt your feet. You ain't got to, you know, wear out your little soles on your, you know, on your shoe, on your red bottoms. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to do none of that. You know, your Adams is stay clean, ain't no dust on them. You know that the wagon
no,
my, driving off
look, look, look.
The party.
No, Scout, the wagon's sitting on 22.
Yeah.
They done pimped out the wagon. The wagon's
stop.
Pimped out. It's sitting on chrome.
That not to stop because I start hearing that old strip club song in my head.
Okay, but you know, but one of the things, and you know, about the Atlanta thing, you know, kind of trying to get back to that, and you know, one of the things that after that came out, you know, Black Lives Matter was asking questions, but Bernie Sanders already had the answers, and one of the most stunning things is if you go to first of all, if you have any question about Bernie's stance on anything, go to feeltheburn.org. They have it beautifully set up. Big ups to this is all volunteers who have done this. Some of them come out of the Occupy movement. They put together, like, this is a one-stop shop. But there's a video of Bernie Sanders in 1991. Because people need to understand about the Clinton crime bill, and yeah, that's theirs. They own it, right? That started in 1991. It got passed in 94. But in 1991, Bernie is sitting in the well of Congress, and it was prophetic where he sat there and he talked about everything that we see, the rise of mass incarceration, the effect, the negative impacts that it had on Black and brown people, because, you know, what a lot of people need to understand is that on the state level, and this is why local elections matter just as much as the congressional and presidential ones, that it was codified that, you know, when they started building all these prisons and everything, well, they had to, these private prison corporations, they were like, their lobbyists were like, well, we need a guaranteed minimum. So these prisons are going to stay full because they are mandated by the state to have extra number of people in there. So this is why you see people going in there. You know, we've got low-level nonviolent offenders who are basically populating these jails. They're not full of violent, you know, people like Richard Pryce that need to be in jail.
This is the other thing. Because of the simple fact they kind of fixed this so it wouldn't be such a PR problem, if you look at some of the private probation companies,
mm-hmm.
they are directly to the same prison companies. Because, see, the private prison companies understand that it is not great PR to send everybody to jail. Because sooner or later, that could cause a problem in the electoral process, which may get elected officials elected that might pull those contracts and they end up losing money. So then they decided, well, we can't send everybody to jail. We'll put some of them on probation. So then what happens is now you have this probationary, this private probation situation taking place, because a lot of you are not paying probation to the counties or the city governments in which are prosecuting you. You're paying a private company, which is supervising that. That's why you pay the probation fee. Okay, that's why you're paying the probation fee, because they have to pay their people. They have to make some money. Because if you've ever been on probation and can't pay your whole probation off that week or
they'll
month
be
or
at
whatever,
your door. They'll put a little card on your door and they'll be back to come pick your ass
they
up.
They won't be at your door. This is exactly if you call them and you're willing to work out something with them. Well, and I know like in Troop County it's like $44. It's $44 is your probation fee. Now, usually your fine per month is somewhere around $90 to $100, particularly if you're in one of those traffic violations. The actual fee to pay it off, you know, the actual thing that you're paying as the fine is maybe about $100 a month, plus the $44 a month probationary fee. They'll tell you in a heartbeat, just bring us our $44 and we'll just, you know, we'll let you put, as long as you keep them $44 in hand.
But that's loan sharking. You're just paying on the VIG.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're doing.
You're paying on the VIG.
And see, this is the great thing, and I don't know if they do it in other counties, but they do it in Troop County. And see, in Troop County, if you pay off, you go ahead and pay off the fine, they'll let you off probation early. But nobody ever goes into that because the probation office is busy telling you, if you just pay this amount, we'll let you slide. If we pay this amount, we'll let you slide. Now, you got to pay it off now before your term is up. Or you got to go back in court and they extend the probation and this, that, and other. They'll do it because they're going to make the money. And we as a people are dumb enough to go in there and say, okay, I'll go ahead and pay you the $44. Because, you know, what thing is that some of us can't afford to pay that anyway. That's the reason we're on probation, because we couldn't afford to pay the fine.
But that's the same way a title loan works. I mean, it's the same exact business model. And that's why privatization is a problem for me.
Right.
You know,
and the thing is, if you look and go back, each one of your municipalities, if you go back and look at your county government, if you go back and look at your state house and your state senate, and you look at all the bills that was passed to allow this to happen, I promise you that you will find very few Democrats voted against it.
Yeah.
Because it all
because
the lobbyists helped pay for it. Then you see that was at the same time they could say that they were being tough on crime, but at the same time, you know, giving some type of relief to the community. And it wasn't that at all. And so when you got this type of loyalty that the black elite are playing off to the people like the Clintons and the establishment, that helps build up the racial inequality that we have, and the same political inequality that we have that leads to the same apathy and disillusionment in our community. Now you see why all the dots connect. Because people are like, okay, I don't have a choice when I go to the ballot box because Representative X is always on there. They've been in 10 years. Nobody can run against them. And when they do, they ruthlessly crush the other person with so much money and this, that, and other that it makes it infeasible to even go try to run against them. So basically what we're living in is a bunch of small African dictatorships here in America. We got Robert Mugabe, Charles Taylor, and bumbling in our backyard.
But they're more subtle.
Right. We don't have the kind of dictators like, you know, Muammar Gaddafi and Fidel Castro. Who will export the revolution, but at the same time at home, at least you're getting health care, you're getting school, you're getting all the stuff that you need just to keep your mouth closed. These people are raping us and taking all our shit and still ain't giving us nothing.
And then come to you and say, but here's the thing, you show up, ain't nobody seen y'all for 4 years. Then you pop up and say, well, you need to vote for me because I got this after, you know, basically cheating off of other people's papers and coming up and saying, I have these answers. And it's like, yeah, we heard that before. You know, cool story, go sit down somewhere. But I'm trying to tell you what's best for you, but you haven't listened to me. And that's the whole crux. You know, I can't be too mad at Black Lives Matter for keeping this issue up in the forefront, because the only time we hear any politician on any side talk about this is when there's an election coming up, because you need my vote. But once you get my vote, I can't see you, I can't talk to you, I can't get you on the phone. You want to tell me to go talk to somebody else? And this is where the argument that comes out of the electorate is valid. You know, you're not listening to me, and part of that is the money and politics dynamic. And we're seeing right now how the money in politics works. And people like to talk about the problem of money in politics, but they don't know exactly how it's used against them in very subversive ways.
Now, let me sit there and say this, because I still represent rural Georgia. Now, we have a similar...
And
there's
strange things going on down there, too.
We have a kind of a reverse situation. Because, see, the Democratic Party really pays no attention to rural Georgia. They don't pretty much abandon us Republicans, okay? And so when you sit there and you see rural Democrats coming out, black or white, you know them from scrapples, okay? Now, and a lot of the times you get the Metro Democrats going to them and hoodwinking the hell out of them, basically telling them, well, you know what? You just vote with me because this is really a Metro thing, and if you do this for me, then I help you out with your rural issue. But we never get no help on our issues. We help push along whatever they're trying to do to hold on to that power here. But we don't get no real help down in rural to push back. Because if you look at like the 2nd Congressional District, the 2nd Congressional District is a Democratic stronghold on the federal level. But there are very few Democratic state senators and House of Representatives, members of the House of Representatives, out of the 2nd Congressional District because of the way they done gerrymandered the hell out of the 2nd Congressional District. And that's the black belt. Why are there no black people, not even black Republicans, representing the largest black population in our state outside of Atlanta? These people have no representation of their own. And it's being pushed off. And the sad thing is that the Democrats down there are fighting it, but they can't. The only way we can help stop it is to get some help from the Metro Democrats, which are too worried about holding along to their own little fiefdom.
But they have good selfies.
If you go to rural Georgia very much feels the burn.
Yeah, they do. They really, really do. And if you look at the map of the voter turnout, that's where you're going to find those voters, and that's why it's very important for those who do feel the burn to start transitioning from being such a social media heavy presence and getting out there and talking to those voters. Because if one more person tells me, we got to get more black people, you know, knowing about Bernie. Well, first of all, you know, you may not see it. And if you listen to what you hear in the media, you will get psyched out and think there is. And when you get out there and talk to people, look, I'm back in where you were off of Old Natty. The other day we were driving down Old National going towards 285. I saw two cars with Bernie Sanders stickers. And it was like, oh wow! I haven't seen a Hillary. I haven't seen anybody put a Hillary Clinton sticker on their car. Now, if you talk to old school, you will hear that, you know, yeah, we're voting for Hillary, you know, and it's mostly those. It's like the black church contingent, you know, and those of the older generation. But when you talk to the newer generation, either they're not involved in politics and they're unaware, and you let them know, you know, you put the Pepsi challenge of Bernie versus Hillary before them, and 9 times out of 10, they'll pick Bernie. They'll be like, oh, hell yeah. So you got to get out. You got to, and it's really that simple. The same thing we did in 2008, same thing we got to do in 16.
Right. We got to do it again. I mean, because that's the one thing that the Clinton campaign ain't going to do, because of the simple fact that the political elite is not going to rub elbows with the lower classes. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
No.
We got to go out there and build. We got to go build with the folks. We got to build with Pookie and them on the corner. Pookie and P right now. They really understand what's going on. They just don't think nobody's going to fix it. These folks on the corner know what's going on because they live in it. They dealing with these public programs and stuff directly. They're dealing with the employees. They know the system better than we do because they have to live in it.
Thank you. Don't discount Pookie and Sharkeesha. You know what I'm saying? Don't look down on them and think they don't know what's going on. They see things on a different level than you do. They may not use them SAT words, but they know exactly what's going on uptown. And don't get it fooled. Don't get it fooled. Oh, quickly, if the First in the South candidate forum, November 6th, Rock Hill, South Carolina, I'm going to go up there. There's two events. There's going to be something up there all day. I'm going to put it on our Facebook page. I don't know if tickets are sold out. But if you are in the area, whether you have a ticket or not, and you're a Bernie supporter, you need to show up. This is for the South. This is our moment. If there's any way you can make it down to Rock Hill, South Carolina, Rachel Maddow will be moderating the debate starting at 7 o'clock. I'm planning, look, I'm just going to pack a lunch and spend the whole day there.
Heading down. All right, just down south and dirty, y'all. Y'all got any ideas for the show, send it to us. We got some things we working on, but we are showing us like to know what y'all would like to hear about. So just hit us up on our Facebook page. If you know me or Stacy, hit us up on Twitter, Facebook. Just talk to us. It's down south and dirty, and we out.
Peace.